lit bedroom.
I'm always a gremlin. Let's start.
Hello,
Okay. and we're back, and I'm pushing buttons, and it makes me nervous. Hello, we are totally not okay.
you're totally fine. Don't even lie.
I know, but that's actually the first time that I remember to say the title of our podcast in the entire third season that we've done.
Wait, so let's actually do it then.
Oh, you want? I don't know. Who starts? You?
It's been so long. We're gonna fuck it up no matter what. So
Okay, let's do it in one voice.
stop it. You know we can't.
I know. Maybe Haps will change that so that we can do karaoke too. All right, we
Yeah.
are, no, how do I hello, hello. We are, so, you do it.
Hi, and welcome to We're Totally Not Okay.
But that's okay.
The podcast about the intersection of mass media culture and mental health. I'm Kaylee LeGrand.
I'm Justin and I'm back. And last time I should have been here because I would have been yelling at Kaylee.
No, you did fine.
Did you
Please.
listen to
I didn't li I haven't listened to all of it, but I listened to a couple select chunks and it was good.
it? Okay. We had somebody, I don't know if you noticed this part, but there was an audience member who so strongly represented you. I was so excited to see like comments at the end. Frank was putting up little symbols for those who are listening in the audio only version later on. Oh, what are you doing? Come join us on Haps and you can watch it all happen live. Especially excited because today we have a bit of a presentation. But in the audience where there's a chat section, somebody who has been watching since the beginning of the season three first episode, he put up this little timer when it was getting like close to an hour. And I'm like, oh man, Justin is here in spirit.
And you still went an hour and a half.
Oh, did I? Was it actually that long?
Yeah, it was.
Fantastic. Well, we'll try to. I mean, you're here. Things are going to be a little bit more in control because you're more organized, I say.
Lies. Lies. I guess that brings us to, without further ado.
Yeah, let's bring on in Rodrigo, make him introduce himself.
Hello, guys. Nice. It's nice to be here. Thank you very much. You guys are crazy, you know? But I love it.
Oh man. I think that's a pretty apt a representation of at least me. Like I said, Justin's more organized, but I am the chaos to all of this mess.
But I love it. I love it. So, my name is Rodrigo Portaro. I'm from São Paulo, Brazil, and now I am a storyteller. I think everybody here is a kind of storyteller. Everybody's a storyteller, but I work with that. I help people and brands and executives to create great stories. And but my journey started actually in economics. I studied accounting, and something that I don't know who knows that, but it's called actuarial science. People who like risks to study how to calculate risk, mitigate risks. And after that, I made accounting, and I was working on PricewaterhouseCoopers, that is a consulting company. And after 6 years, I quit because I was sad, a kind of depressed. I was not enjoying my work, and I was asking myself, this really, seriously, this is life. I want to do something more interesting. I want to do something more that resonates with me. And I started to research and make some courses, and I find this word that is storytelling. And I was totally passionate about it. And I quit my job and I started to work in a company called The Plot Company. Because a plot is something that is really, really important to story. And we were helping brands and executives to create great stories. So this is kind of who I am, but I am also a guy who like sports. I like to run every day. I like to skateboard, but that is a long time that I don't do it because I know, you know, I'm getting old.
I thought you were going to say just you're not allowed to go outside. Are you allowed to go? Are you still allowed to go out and skateboard and run? What are the restrictions like for you in Brazil?
Oh, here we are living on lockdown again, the second time. So I'm not allowed to do that. But we can run in the street just for health. You know, this is allowed. But this is good as well because I'm working a lot of stories. I have a huge project running right now, and this is a good time to improve it.
Amazing. So did you say you started the plot company or you joined the plot company once you moved into finances?
Yeah, I joined the plot company because I had a founder partner. He was the founder partner and he brought Robert McKee. I don't know if you know him, but he's a guru in Hollywood. Oh, do you have a story? Great.
It's my Bible.
Yeah, this is the Bible for screenwriters around the world. And this guy was invited by my partner. My partner calls Johnny, all right? it's easier to understand. So Johnny is the founder, and he brought Robert McKee to become a partner. And I joined 1 year later as a partner as well. And so this makes me partner of Robert McKee during 3 years. And I went to London to study with him. I made all the courses of him. And when I came back to Brazil, I started to write. So I became a screenwriter as well. This is the beginning of the a new version of Rodrigo, you know, the Rodrigo from finance, not died, but fell in sleep, you know, and Rodrigo creator, Rodrigo writer, rised. So this is a little bit of my story.
So the rising of the phoenix from the ashes, and this is a different chapter of your life.
Yes, totally, totally, totally. This is just like a Rodrigo happy and with a purpose, you know, in life. So this is totally different, Rodrigo.
That's super fascinating. I know that we're going to get into story principles. That's what we've titled the episode with you. And we're going to actually offer to listeners a little bit of a breakdown. Well, I say we, you, this is your life's work. And you're not only, you know, like us storytellers, but part of the work that you're now doing is about helping other people also become the storytellers that they want to be. If that's close enough to what I've understood from, you know, our last meeting and chatting about why you have chosen this line of work, but the fact that you're talking about, you know, the word purpose, I don't know how often we bring this idea up of purpose, but it's something that I've been hearing a lot, especially over the past year. And being a podcast that focuses on the intersection between mass media culture and mental health, I'm super fascinated with the ways in which that intersection itself is changing and that people are, I feel almost that it's changing in a way where purpose itself is kind of the spearhead of this movement. Everyone is turned, not everyone, but I guess I can speak for myself. This has been a period of incredible reflection and looking inward and asking, you know, myself why I have lived a certain life. And it sounds like there's something similar in the way that you had that shift for yourself, moving from a different career into storytelling. Is storytelling, how would you position that as far as your purpose goes? Why is storytelling your purpose now?
That's a good question. I like to think that purpose is not something that you find, you know? It's not something lost and you are trying to find, you know? I don't know where is it, where my purpose live, what my purpose eat and breathe. I don't know. I don't know where. So how I will find it? I cannot find it, but I can build it, right? So I can put something in practice. I can create a project and I can try to test something, to taste something, to build something. And suddenly we realize, oh, I like to do that. You know, this is really great. I felt good to doing that. So now I think I found my purpose until this project ends. And a new project arises and a new purpose I need to find. So I like to think that way. And when I quit my job, I was kind of surrendering, you know? I was kind of trying to understand what I feel, not only what I think, but what I feel. And I felt bad. So I thought something needs to change. So when I start to relate to storytelling work and put my my hands on it, you know, and starting to write, starting to study about, I felt good. So when I felt good, I thought, maybe my purpose is related to that. So this is how I think I discovered my purpose.
And what exactly were you doing? Did you know what your path was going to look like when you joined the plot company? Did you know what kind of work you were doing with Robert McKee?
Not at all. Not at all. I was, you know, I was using suit and tie and here in Brazil, we have a city called São Paulo that is the biggest city from Brazil. And we have a neighborhood that is the financial neighborhood, just like Wall Street in New York. But here is Faria Lima. I was working there and everybody's just look like me. So I kind of didn't know how life was outside of the bubble, you know. So I had a feeling that I outside of the bubble, there was a new world, a whole universe to explore, but I didn't know what. So I when I say that I surrendered to live inside of the bubble. So I was open to life. That's it.
We'll be right back after this short break.
So you just got done listening to the new episode of this podcast, and now you're looking for another one to get into. I know what you're thinking, but Cody, the new podcast I want to get into is an improvised comedy with a horror theme. Well, guess what, little podcast fiend? You're barking up the right alley, because I'm one of the hosts of Spooked, the improvised scary story podcast where it's never scary and sometimes a story. Now you're thinking, wow, that sounds awesome, but where do I find that? Well, the same place you found this one, thesonarnetwork.com. You click on it, you listen, and get ready to get spooked.
And we're back.
And what exactly was the work that you were doing with Robert McKee? You said that the plot company has, you have an association with him, but from my understanding, when he comes over, is it into all of, is it South America? Is it also North America? Whenever he comes to deliver lectures on storytelling, what is it that you were doing with him and his work?
Yeah, we represent him in Brazil. So everything that is related to the story, we created a Story Business Edition that is a course about storytelling that is the same course that he gives in Hollywood or in London, the story seminar. And so we're giving for him here in Brazil. And some specific projects that clients would afford, we involved him to create the scripts. So we were helping companies and executives to create better stories. So I think that an executive, when he are thinking to build a PowerPoint presentation to a TED Talks, he needs a story, right? So we help those executives to create the story. Or a company creating a whole campaign, a storified campaign, you know, with episodes and seasons. And we helped the companies to build the script as well. But also the whole production. We are a production company.
Okay, and when you say, I mean, we're going to be using the word story a lot, and it, and in many ways, you know, you've shifted into a world about story, but as far as your career goes, but I think story surrounds all of us in so many ways.
Yeah.
Before we get into actually breaking down story and how somebody else might be able to tackle those components to build their own stories, much in the same way I'm sure that, you know, a business that you're talking about, when you go into corporations and teach them how to communicate by using this thing called story, maybe you can share a little bit about why you think story is powerful. What makes it a powerful tool?
That's an awesome question. I think I can present the first slide because this is exactly what I'm going to talk about in my presentation.
Sure, I'm going to have questions along the way. So
yeah, please make this very conversational, right? So
So what we're going to be doing for those who are listening only, Rodrigo has joined us on the audiovisual platform that we've been broadcasting on called HAPS, but we've also allowed him to kind of hack in and have some controls to show some visual aids that, and clarify if I'm speaking incorrectly about this, Rodrigo, but these are some of the tools that you use when you are communicating and breaking down what story is for, say, going into a boardroom or talking to a company so that they can better use story and the components that it is built of. So visually, for those who are watching along, like during or after on YouTube, that's what you're going to be able to see.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, exactly like that. I give you techniques, principles, and everybody that has an open mind can relate these techniques to any kind of situation that needs a story. Sometimes we need a story to present ourselves, you know, to an interviewer for a job. Sometimes we need to tell our story to, I don't know, create an interview and podcasting. We tell our story anytime, you know, in real life, or we can create stories about the future. So that's fictional stories. There are fictional stories. So I can, for example, tell you a story about a company building a service or a product and show to my consumers how our lives will be in the future if we be together, right? So I can create stories to the past, to the future, about the present, about myself, about someone else, about a brand, so stories are everywhere, literally.
Before we move on to the slideshow, Rodrigo, just to clarify, when you talk about the work that the plot company is doing, it's predominantly for businesses. It's for commercials, for TED Talks, it's for interview techniques, it's for making pitch presentation and getting funding for your startup. It's predominantly around the business world, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I also have an initiative that the name is in Portuguese, that is Academia da Trama, that is for people from in the entertainment business. So people who are trying to create stories can be something like a movie, can be something like an audio story, can be a book, can be a gaming, you know, something like that. But this is in the beginning. We are creating a community, and I can talk more about later today.
So what you're going to be talking about today is more so the basics, so that let's say you're speaking with a screenwriter or you're speaking with somebody who works on the marketing team who then has to go on and promote a film once it's at that stage. These are going to be tools that can be, that are basically, you're laying the groundwork, the base principles that you would then probably, I'm assuming, tailor to whatever board of directors you're speaking to, or screenwriter you're speaking to, or marketing executive you're speaking to, right?
Yeah, but it's exactly like that. But if we are talking, if screenwriters start to listen to us right now, they probably knows the structure of a story that I'm going to show today, because the principles and the techniques are the same to pitch or to create a movie. They are the same principles. A story is a good story because of the same principles. So people will understand how these principles apply to a pitch or to create a whole series. You know, it's the same thing. Okay.
I love it. Justin, do you have any other questions before we hop to the first slide?
No, you're good. On with the show.
Okay, hit us with the first slide.
All right, cool. So I have a question for you guys. What is a story in your point of view? What is a story? Simple question, right? What is a story?
Am I supposed to answer that?
Yeah.
Okay, so just a rhetorical question. Oh, no. God. A story is, for me, it's what manipulates me. It is my God. It is what I revere. It is everything.
Cool. Okay.
And I don't know how healthy of an answer that is, but it's my obsession as an actor and as a screenwriter. It's imbued in everything around me.
All right. So, and what makes a story a great story?
Oh, I'm the wrong person to answer this, because I think it depends. I mean,
in one word, conflict.
What's that, Justin?
In one word, conflict. Conflict.
Conflict. All right. Conflict.
And I was the representation of that.
Yeah, conflict must have in a story. But I will facilitate for you guys. The answer that I'm following right now is, stories are equipment for living. Kenneth Burke say that, and somehow each story, each great story, should teach us something, and help us to live our lives. Robert McKee used to say that stories are metaphor for life. They kind of imitate what how life works, and the audience relate to the character, the protagonist, and learn with him or her, right? So we are all trying to understand how a story can teach, equip us to live, you know? So Aristotle, the ageless question from Aristotle is how human beings should live their life. So stories bring answers to that question. That's what we say that is a great story. And a story is something that is in us, you know? Our mind works in a story form, such as our life. Our mind, when we sleep, we dream in a story form. Something happened, and then something happened, and then something happened, right? And we think in story form. Oh, if I do that, something will happen, and then something will happen. So story is not only a technique. is an understanding how life works, right? That's it. So this is what a story is. And that's why stories are everywhere. We can use to marketing, to branding, to pitch, to sales, to community, to create a community, because community is based on stories, right? People share their stories and start to relate it to each other, and try to create a unit of values and beliefs and customs and ideas, right? So community building can use storytelling, writers, speakers, podcasters, film producers, series producers, leaders, just like Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. They were great storytellers. So stories are literally everywhere, right?
I have a question already.
Yeah, let's do it.
So you're talking about values, and it makes me think back to this idea of purpose that we were talking about, and how you posit it as something that isn't necessarily its own entity walking around breathing and eating, but that you can build, that it comes from you. When you sit down with a screenwriter or a marketing team or other business professionals, are you fleshing out, I guess, do you start off with the questions of what their values are? And are you making a translation into building that idea of purpose for them? Or is purpose something that you find most of those teams that you're sitting down with, they already have, and they're bringing that to you, and that's how you're building values from it? Kind of like chicken and egg, which one comes first for you?
Yeah, I start asking people about who is your story, you know? Who is the protagonist, or who are the protagonists, right? And what they want, and why they want what they want. These kind of questions start to provoke the screenwriter to understand deeply who is the protagonist, about who is this story. And the values came up when they are trying to answer those kind of questions. So why they want what they want, you know? Why they desire that? What are the motivations? And people need to think deeply. Why my character want this? You know, let's say in the business world, for example, a CEO wants to rise the KPIs. You know, I don't know. He want a better ROI. You know, return over investment. Okay, this is what the character want, but why they want? He want what he want. What is the motivation? Oh, he needs to prove to the board of the company that he is a CEO who runs well a company, you know? So he wants to belong. He wants to be recognized by his work. So these are the things that he valued the most. So trying to answer those kind of questions shows us what are the values of that character. And my job as a screenwriter is to violate the values, you know, bring conflict, right?
So yeah. Yeah. Very aggressive wording. I love it. You violate the values. And so far I've heard the who and the why. And as a journalist coming from a background of journalism, you know, that's the number one thing that we learn is all those W's, the who, what, why, where, when, sometimes how.
Yeah. And ask yourself why 5 times, you know, why, but why, you know, you need to go deep inside to understand what are the deepest values in that story that you want to tell.
Oh, Rodrigo, my parents are not going to be happy that you just told me to ask why 5 more times than I'm already asking.
Why?
I was that kid that wasn't just in the back seat saying, "Are we there yet?" I didn't care about whether we were there yet or where we were even going, because I was already building worlds of my own imagination, imagining even the lines on the road floating up. Not even imagining, I believed that these things were happening, that like the lines on the road were actually lifting off and they were magical. And I had all these questions about why, about the world. So this, I'm blaming on you. I'm now putting it on you.
No, but actually this makes you really smart. You know, you are curious about life. I used to say that to become a storyteller, you don't need to only to have the talent of writing. You need to have the talent about understanding and making reflections about how life works. And the best way to do that is asking why, you know? So if you don't make these kind of reflections, you usually don't have nothing deep or meaningful to say. So I think you are very smart to ask why since you were a kid, you know?
I am so glad that we have this on camera. I'm sending it.
That's
keeping
cool.
Things on track. Let's get back to the presentation.
Yeah.
Back to the presentation. What's the next slide?
Yeah, I have a question again. So,
okay.
My question is when we need to tell a story. So, it's not all the time. I need to tell a story all the time. You know, I want to, I don't know, report the numbers of my company to someone, or I need to.
Playing devil's advocate here. Every time you open your mouth, you're telling a story. Presenting numbers are arbitrary, meaningless things unless we assign them meaning, which is the story that goes behind them.
Yeah, perfect. That's the answer. We have a story to tell when we have something meaningful to say, right? If I just want to report the number only to show the number and that's it, I don't have nothing to say, I don't need to tell a story. I print a report and I send the report. I don't need to tell a story.
What I'm saying is the act of printing that report is a story itself.
Yeah, it's you doing a story, right? It's you creating a story. You are making a story. This is what we call a story doing, not a story telling.
I feel like Justin is getting into this metaphysical reality realm that you don't, right. I mean, I'm going to blame you if I go on to a metaphysical rant, but
no,
I agree.
No problem, let's do it. I don't know if I understood
that, like,
correctly, but I
even think the way that you sip your tea can be an artful story.
Yeah, I understand where you're going. Yes, that in that kind of way, just sending a report, there is a story in there, you know, but this is not me telling a story. There is no beginning, middle, and end in the communication, you know, but for sure that report can care a story, but I don't know if this is what you are trying to talk about, Justin.
I think so. I think I just disagree with the fact that you have to have something meaningful to say in order to be telling a story. You can tell a story about a coffee cup and have nothing meaningful to say about a coffee cup.
Okay. But why you are going to tell a story that if you don't have something meaningful to say? Why?
Well, I mean, I think that just comes down to human nature. We're based on like, we are a species that relies on communication, whether it's body language or actual speech or et cetera, yeah. Et cetera, that you don't necessarily need to tell a story with a beginning, middle, and end to be telling a story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. You don't need to have the beginning, middle, and end, but you still needing to have something to say. Right, you want, if you are sharing a story, you are trying to relate to someone else, and if you are trying to relate, there is meaning in some way, you know.
Yeah, that's what I hear as a difference, is that like as a species, we, the whole point, the whole form of communication, I guess why we continually extrapolate and make more intricate our forms of communication is because there is something in us that we try to express, and whatever that thing is that is ineffable, I guess, in essence, is the nugget of meaning. So yeah, a set of numbers is still just a set of numbers, and it's the context, whether it does have a beginning, middle, and end, or if it's an atypical structure of a story that is, purposefully being used in a manner that breaks typical beginning, middle, and end structure. It's the point of ever opening your mouth and saying something, or the point of ever wanting to communicate anything, is it must come from a place of meaning, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. If I'm sharing a story that is from outside, we see this story just like something inoffensive, or something that is by just seeing and watching this story from outside, I think this story that doesn't have something meaningful to say, right? If I'm trying to say that kind of story, for the communicator, for the storyteller, why he's opening his mouth to tell that, it's because something there is important to him, right? If it's something important, thinking in the word import, I can import something to somewhere else. You know, I need to transfer something.
The data transfer.
Yeah, just like a data transfer. So if I'm open my mouth because something is important to me, is because I'm trying to transfer some idea, something to someone else. So if this is important to me, this has some kind of meaning. Can be something really meaningful, or something that is just meaningful, you know, just something like that that is important to me, or something like that. But I totally agree that this is a long conversation about it, right?
That's a good point.
I don't want to make it longer, but I will say I like Justin's pushback here, specifically because my mind is stuck in this place of trying to understand, well, what is meaningful? What's the point? Why would anybody want to open their mouth and try to convey something? And how do we understand that it is going to be meaningful for whoever is going to consume it, for the audience members? And I, just as an aside, I agreed to my acting coach to be his editor. He's writing a book, and basically he's sending me all of the material that he's written in the past 20 years to now seed through. So I want to try to understand what that differentiation is, what is going to be meaningful and what we discard.
Cool.
Well, there's also a distinction here too. I think what Rodrigo's trying to present here is that it's meaningful to someone else, but you could also tell a story that has no meaning to you or Rodrigo, but is immensely meaningful for me to just get out.
Yeah, it's true. I agree. I totally agree with that. Cool.
Moving on.
Yeah.
We'll get to audience segmentation later. Okay, next slide.
Let's just think now about what is the storyteller killers, right? What kills a story? I have many things to say around here, but I want to focus in what I think is the most important one. That is a disease that Robert McKee calls negaphobia, the fear of all things negative, so, and their consequence. So I have the fear to share some vulnerabilities. I have the fear to share that I'm not perfect, that I failed, so the fear kills a good story if you have fear to share. This is really important here, because if a story is based on conflict and I fear to share what I felt and what I thought about that kind of situation that I lived, I will bring no conflict or no meaningful conflict, right, to the story. So why I'm telling these, why people are investing their time to listen to my story if you don't show how you were smart or strong to relate to something difficult or vulnerable, right? So this is the most important serial killer of storytellers.
So it's kind of like the ROI, what you get back for what you put in.
Yeah, sure. If you put in only a character just like a hero that achieves everything that he wants, that he has the superpowers to solve everything, why should I relate to this kind of character? I'm trying to live my life, and my life is tough, and I'm facing a lot of struggles, and I want to listen to stories that help me to go through my life, you know, to deal with my life. And the perfectionism here is not helping storytellers to tell stories, right? That's why I think Marvel movies are becoming more popular, because the heroes sometimes they don't know what to do. You know, they are more humans right nowadays. They are vulnerable. You know, Batman sit down in a chair and ask himself, why I'm doing this? Should I do this really? Should I do this? Or Iron Man in the last Avengers, you know, he's vulnerable. So that's a key to create connection to audience.
Yeah, I think Marvel is not only, I mean, I'm looking at my pile of comics next to me, so I'm obviously a fan, Marvel does a great job of just recognizing those key ingredients and heightening them to their extremes of whether it's, you know, they're not just humans, they're superhumans in some sort of aspect, and they're not just vulnerable, they're super vulnerable in certain aspects. I'm a fan. I think that's a great reference.
Yeah. Sometimes people say, oh, but superheroes are a fantasy and this is not life. It's a metaphor for life, actually. It's a total new universe. It's a whole other planet, you know. It's other rules. But somehow, as human beings, they are somehow related to normal people, just like us.
There's something inherently powerful about and maybe I'm starting to answer my own question about before that the power of story, and we're going to work through this, but there's something inherently powerful about storytelling as a mechanism of creating empathy, because they are analogies, they are metaphors that we as audience members will consume to live vicariously through. And, you know, you were referencing Aristotle, and we harken back to Plato, this idea of catharsis, that we don't have to do the Indiana Jones trek. We don't have to run through fire in order to actually go on an emotional roller coaster that kind of takes us along a similar or vicarious process with that journey of the hero. But the idea that you're going to get some pushback, obviously, even if somebody wants to say that these are superheroes, it's not real. Well, any movie that you go see, any story that you hear is not going to be your reality, but that's sort of the point. And that's the connection that when we share through story, we can both share that journey in a sense for the catharsis. Am I making sense with that?
Just to jump in on that too, Kales, I would caution anyone who is watching this, especially having just produced a documentary myself, even the content we perceive as being real is not real.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, what's that?
Everything is fictional, right? Even if you're trying to create that, recreate the reality, or just pointing historical facts, when you try to create a story with historical facts, It's your point of view of the facts, because the truth is not the fact. Is the truth is what you think about the fact, right?
Yeah, that's a great angle. It's also very interesting to, I love that, Justin, you're putting this caution out there, because we've already established you use these tools to, I mean, you break down story into these principles for not just other storytellers who are screenwriters or who want to do a beat slam poetry night and just be a better communicator, but with corporations that are also sifting an insane amount of money into marketing and advertising. So to understand how these principles play into that sort of power that story can have over somebody, I think we're becoming a lot more aware too. I mean, we're not all going to immediately believe that buying the right shaving cream is going to get us legs that will bring the future that we want. You know, we're not living in that world anymore.
Yeah. I think that we are starting to live a new era, right? The old era created communications that were more, how can I say that? When we see big brands creating campaigns, they are focusing on the product and how perfect they are and how big they are. And actually, to the new generations, this is, sorry the word, but this is bullshit, right? People don't want to be related to the perfect brand. They want to be authentic. They want to be, they want to share. They want to collaborate. They want to be themselves and be true, you know? When I'm saying that megaphobia is a problem, because every kind of megaphobia, every time that we are negating the negative side of life, you are not telling the truth, right? So the truth you must tell, Yoda, you would say, right?
So
This is the most important principle for a story, to try to tell the truth, you know. I know that the truth is not something categorical. What is the truth, right? This is a question that we can spend hours and hours and days talking about. But each story has its own truth, you know. So truth. So a character behaving like we expect can be truth, can be not truth. Let's take an example about horror movies, right? If a protagonist is running away from the monster and he's in a closed space, everything is dark, and he see the day of light in far away, and he try to run to that point. And we are, as an audience, we are tense, and we are expecting him to go to that place. But he remembered that he forgot a pencil in the room, and he need that pencil, and he come back. Nobody does that, you know, in real life. So he behaves in a way that is not truth, you know. So when this happens, audience say, "Oh, this is bullshit," you know. I don't watch this kind of movie. Who does that, you know? So in a kind of way, this kind of behavior is not telling the truth. The truth would be the carrot gets out of there, and if he needs, he will have a plan, create a plan to come back and take the pencil, you know, or something like that. This is real.
I mean, if it's a really good pen, like one of those gel pens, I understand.
Yes, exactly. So the protagonist needs to reveal to the audience the real motivations, the real values. If he values his life, he will never come back and and put his life in danger, you know? So we need to pay attention about the behaviors of our characters, just like companies need to pay attention about their behaviors. So when I see a traditional bank saying that they help people, here in Brazil, the banks are too, it's like the devil institutions, you know? they have high interests, they manipulate everything. So if I see a bank here in Brazil telling that they help people, you know, in TV, I would say this is a lie, you know, can be the most beautiful story. People can cry in the end because in the story has a baby laughing and an old woman dying, you know, and we get emotional. But in the end, the bank is sending us a message that is not true. You know, so the truth is really important to make people engage to your story and believe in you, believe in your brand, believe in your story. And this is what will build trust, you know.
Right.
That's so answering your question in the beginning, why story is important, because the story is the most powerful way to build trustful relationships between audiences and characters, between brands and clients, between parents and sons, between friends and family, you know? So this is why story is important.
Speaking of friends, we have the friend that I mentioned who was here last time representing Justin in spirit, Frank, who says, fear can fuel creativity faster than a vision board, which also reminds me of how he reminded me how much overtime we had last time. And I think I've interrupted your presentation so much that we're cutting it close too. How many principles have we addressed, and how many more principles are there for that you teach as part of the basics?
Cool. So each story is about someone, the protagonist. This character has desires. So all stories needs to reveal the desires. We can segregate the desires between the conscious desires and the unconscious desires. So the conscious desires are usually what the character wants. And the unconscious desires are their motivations or the what the character needs to understand, to realize, to live, you know? So we have two concepts here, two principles here. So we have protagonist. Every story is about someone. And this character has desires, right? And in order to make the character get what he wants, we need to create a path that is truthful, right? So the other principle is tell the truth. So we covered these three principles right now.
Okay.
All right.
So are those the three main building blocks then that you share?
Yeah. I think this is the most important ones, and everything that I'm going to show right now is more about the structure. So how to build the beginning, middle, and end.
Okay.
So every story starts with a bit. A bit is an action or a reaction. So if you punch me in the face, is a bit. if I punch you back, it's another bit. So many bits together creates a scene. A scene is an event, and event means change. So each scene in a story needs to bring a change in the protagonist's life, all right? Can be a change, a more powerful change or a meaningless change, but there is some change in each scene. When I put together many scenes, I create a sequence of scenes. And when we create many sequences together, we create an act. And when we have three acts together, we create an arc of a story. So only to give an example about scenes and sequences and the change, let's say that in a scene, I was walking the street and someone asked me for help, and I helped him, and he told me in my ears, "You are going to die after the next rain." Whoa. And the scene ends, okay? So my mood changed because I was feeling okay, good to help someone, but in the end of the scene, I was fearing to die, right? So there is a change in a scene. But when in the next scene, I was sleeping, and during the night it started to rain, a rain. And when I wake up, I see the floor wet, and I realize, oh my God, anytime from now I'm going to die. So the scenes together creates a more powerful change or a more powerful sequence, right? So this is how we are going to create scene after scene and building change for a story. Is it clear or is it a bit confused?
Yeah, it makes me think of, I guess, the positive and negative charges that Robert McKee talks about in terms of the structure of a scene, that you either move from a positive to a negative or from a negative to a positive, having that shift.
Yeah. So each story should look like something like this, you know. This is a graphic, a possible graphic about a story. The ups and downs are triggered by the forces of antagonism that are trying to keep the protagonist away from his desires. So the forces of antagonism, the conflicts are throwing the story to the negative. And the forces of the protagonist is working against the forces of antagonism, trying to put the story in a positive mood, you know, is the positive charge. So each scene needs to change the value charge. So if the scene begins in a negative mood, this scene should end in a positive mood. Or if it starts in a negative mood, it can be can end in a double negative mood as well. So going to negative, from negative to double negative or triple negative, is also a change. So this is how we create the ups and downs of the story, right?
So just not staying in the same emotional capacity, having some sort of shift, whether it's up or down.
Yes, exactly. So just explaining to you how the three-act structure works. So how to start a story, to begin a story in a powerful way, we need two things, the setup and the inciting incident. So the setup is the moment that we present our protagonist and his life. What are his habits, who is around him, in what time this story is happening, how is the weather, you know, everything that is important to the story to make the audience understand about who is this story, right?
Right.
And this is the moment, this is a really important moment, because this is the beginning of the process of creating empathy to someone. So the audience is empathizing with the character. The clients are empathizing to the character of the brand is talking about. So this is a really important moment to create this relationship, because the inciting incident that is happening next to the setup is the moment that we violate the expectations of the character and his values. So when we are empathized by the character and we see a character in danger or something violating his values, we care, already care about him or her. So we want to understand how things are going to turn out, how he's going to relate to the progressive complications that he is going to live in the next act. So this is how we create the act one. Do you have some questions about around here?
Nope. I think we're on steady flow. And so we're still talking about a three-act structure because, like Justin mentioned at the beginning, there are different structures that we could play with, but we're talking about a three-act structure, right?
Yeah. I'm not here talking about rules. I'm talking about principles and one kind of structure that is the classical structure of acts, right?
Right.
So we have many others. So when the inciting incident happened, our character's desires are triggered, right? So this is the moment when this character wants something. Every time that our life go out of balance, everything that we want is to go back to balance, right? Nobody wants to live in out of balance. So it's almost automatic. When we plant a good inciting incident, we triggers the story, right? So the act two are the progressive complications that are the longest act and the most difficult one to create, to develop, because this is the moment that our protagonists are going to act with an expectation. And we, as creatives, as writers, as experts in life, we are going to violate the expectations of the character. So it will force the character to think in a new way or try to do something more with a new expectation. And once again, we need to violate these expectations. And creating these violations of expectations, we are creating the ups and downs of the story, and we are keeping the audience engaged, because conflict creates tension, and tension is what keeps people engaged. And in the end of the act two and entering to act three, we have crisis, and after that we have climax and resolution. This is the act three, right? So crisis, climax, and resolution. The crises are the moment that the protagonist doesn't know what to do, or he already knows what to do, but he thinks that maybe he's not getting there, or not. He thinks it's not possible to get where he wants. So the crisis is the moment that the stakes are high, and the audience are expecting to understand how things are going to turn out. And the climax is the obligatory scene, is the moment that things happen and the protagonist can get what he wants or not get what he wants. Or so we have the happy ending, or we have the sad ending, or we can create an ironic ending, right? So he gets what he wants, but he loses something. That's more similar to life, usually. So to get something that is difficult to get, we usually need to open, we need to leave something behind, you know? So this creates a more realistic ending. And the resolution is when the protagonist, we see the change in the life of the protagonist. When we compare the protagonist with the beginning, he's a totally another person. He changed from inside or even outside. You know, when we see Breaking Bad, Mr. White, in the beginning and in the ending of the last season, on the last episode, is a totally different character. He changed. So
no spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
All right. No spoilers.
It's well beyond. We should have all seen it. If I haven't seen it, it's my fault.
No problem.
Continue. So
this is the three-act structure, right?
Yeah.
So if we have time, I don't know if I have time, but if you want to break down the first episode of Breaking Bad, we can do that.
Oh, man, you don't know how much I want to. I think that actually deserves an entirely other...
Another.
I feel like we could get really deep into that. So what do you say about maybe committing to coming back on the podcast and we can do a sequel to your interview? Because I would love that. But I think that that's... I would not want to do it in like 5 minutes, and I've already seen the time.
Yeah, no problem. I will be glad to be back. I love the conversation, and I totally agree. Doing 5 minutes is not best way to break down Breaking Bad. You know, it's worth doing another time.
Yeah, it gives me a chance to watch all of it and all of our viewers so that they have the heads up, so that if they haven't seen it, then they had fair warning. You and I could spend hours talking, and I know that I say that about myself a lot, but the last time that we actually hopped on a call and chatted, it could have gone on for days. So I think at this point, maybe we get into the game that we have set up with you of the one, the two truths and a lie.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
I have them here, unless you have them also in front of you and you want to share them.
I don't have in front of me. So if you want to ask, if you want to, that I open here, whatever you
want. I have them listed beside me. So I'm going to read them out. Justin and I will try to figure out which are the truths and which is the lie. Same goes as always for the audience members watching live. Feel free to jot it down in the chat there which one you think is the lie. So the three items that Rodrigo has shared was that, one, he was a professional swimmer. Two, he was a street magician at school. And the third is that he was an actor as a child. Now, Justin, I noticed that your Wi-Fi was cutting in and out. Did you hear all three of those?
I heard them, but I think I'm just a black box right now. So enjoy this black box speaking at you.
I like it. It's the mystery that is incorporated into storytelling. The unknown is what is interesting.
You have no idea. I'm doing a headstand right now. I'm dancing around my bedroom. No one knows. It's great.
Well, our first guest has come in. Jack believes the lie is number one. So that was that you used to be a professional swimmer. I'm going to, Justin, do you have a guess? Or black box?
Professional swimmer, street musician, or actor?
Yes.
I don't think you were ever an actor.
Okay, so Justin is number three. I feel like being a magician and being an actor are so closely tied to what storytelling entails that I'm going to side with Jack on this one. I think number one is also the lie, that you were not a professional swimmer.
Okay. Should I give my answer, the right answer?
Oh, wait. Now I feel like that makes me sound like I'm telling you you're not a well-rounded individual. And maybe... Yes, you should give your answer now.
All right, Justin's correct. I was a professional swimmer and I was a street magician. So,
oh man, I am jealous. Yeah. I was such a horrible swimmer when I was in high school. I was a diver, but as soon as I hit the water, useless.
My father is a swimming coach, so I have no escape story, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So,
guys, I'm basically Sherlock Holmes. I'll take my prize in writing. Thank you very much.
if you want to send me a script, I can help you with that.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, I feel like you're already sharing so much for free with us, because this is what you do professionally. You share these principles and you go into different boards or companies or rooms for storytellers, screenwriters, whatnot. And you're here sharing them for free. So I am.
No problem. Actually, the principles are in the storybook. So everybody who reads the story from Robert McKee can understand that. The real value of that is to understand or to try to put that in practice. You know, this is the most difficult part. This is the thing that I do for a living, helping people to put this in practice. So don't worry. I'm really glad to be here. It was awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, like I said, I would love to have you back, especially to dive deeper into using an example to show how these are actually illustrative. I know that we also, Justin, I just get nervous seeing a black box. So I'm
here. I can hear you. It's also super sad because I actually, one of the times I disconnected, I went under my bed and pulled out this story thing that I use when I'm making documentaries. And it's basically a corkboard with a shitload of string on it. And I was going to show you guys, but I can't. So that's awkward.
Okay. Well, take a picture with your phone and we can put it in the notes because I do want to see that.
It's hilarious, guys. It looks a little manic right now, but I'll take things off of it and clean it up a little bit.
No, I like manic. My favorite thing is having rooms with like post-it notes on the walls and red string that connects everything that makes me look like a serial killer. So please do share all of that.
I have like the act arcs in string. And then I usually, when I'm doing documentary stuff, I'll print out like a frame on like a little Polaroid of the scenes and then try to arrange them to basically create the story for a documentary. Yay. That's why I'm telling you things aren't real. But that's what I was going to show you guys, but I can't do that. So that's fun.
I have a slide that is exactly that. If you want to share, if you want me to share just in 5 seconds, I can show people how to put that in post-its.
Sure. Go for it.
It just is really fast. Let me present here. I hide from the presentation that I have, but I have another one here.
Well,
just a second. I will share my screen.
I hope it has red string that makes me feel like we're serial killers.
Yeah, sorry for that.
This is making me sound like the villain of everything.
Guys, I'm so sad. I literally like went under my bed and pulled this out and was like, this is great. It's the only time in my life I've ever wanted to show this off. And now it's not, the internet hates me, guys. I live in the middle of nowhere and that's the moral of the story for a pandemic.
Can you not get an ether cable?
Pardon?
Can you not get an ether cable?
Yeah, upstairs where my family is doing things right now.
Oh, well, invite them in.
Welcome to 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, yeah.
Fair.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was wondering if what you talked about is something like that that I'm presenting right now.
Oh, I don't see what you're presenting. I think the other slide that you were showing it looks like the signal was dropped. So you're going to bring that back. There we go.
All right. Are you seeing my screen right now?
Yeah. Okay. Let's blow that up and make that bigger. Okay.
Working everything off. That kills me. Yeah, kind of. Not quite as organized as that. It looks a lot more manic and follows like the actual like tension arcs of the structures.
All right.
And cool. I also have it broken into 5-acts right now because I work in 5-acts, not 3. But yes, similar.
Cool. Yeah. So from the left to the right, we have acts 1, 2, and 3. The act 1 is built by 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7 scenes in 2 sequences, right? And the act 2, which is the biggest one, we have 5 sequences of 5 scenes. And act 3, we have 2 sequences of 5 scenes as well. So
would you say this is the closest thing to that archetypal or Hollywood classic structure of story, what this looks like?
Yes. It's just like that. Each scene should be near to 2 minutes for example. So you have a notion as well of rhythm with that structure. For example, why the Act One has seven scenes, each sequence has had seven scenes, because after the beginning, audiences are trying to get more involved, and the rhythm should change. So for delivering each sequence, each event of sequence, right? We need to deliver that faster to the audience. So that's why it has less scenes. So it's a powerful tool as well to use it.
I love it. Is that your one cool thing? That's not your one cool thing. You had something else, didn't you?
Me?
Yeah, because we do, well, for those who are also maybe tuning in for the very first time, we do a segment at the end that we totally ripped off of John August and Craig Mazin from Script Notes. Another. Wait, what are you laughing about?
No, I just laughed at Script Notes. It's so applicable right now.
It really is. Ooh, well, if any, John August, if you're listening, or Craig Mazin, yeah, they for sure listen to our podcast as well. But if you are listening, you absolutely need to have Rodrigo on your show as well. This has been super informative, and I'm going to have you back as many times as we possibly can, because it's obviously one of my favorite things to talk about. But at the end of our podcast, we do a segment that we call One Cool Thing, and it can be absolutely anything. It can be an actionable item that somebody can incorporate into their own lives for their own mental health. It can be a charity that you donate to. It can be somebody has also, our former co-host, Tanya, used to always just say sleeping, which is absolutely cool and necessary. But you had a different cool thing. I also have it here if you want me to read it out, unless you would like
to say it. because I sent you last week and I forgot what it is. But if you want me to be spontaneous, I can talk about another one or
sure.
Maybe one. I don't know.
I want to hear the spontaneous thing, and I'll include this one in the show notes.
All right. Okay. The really cool thing that I think people must do is to connect with me and in my website, because we are launching a community for storytellers, for people who are trying to understand how to create better stories and create their own audiences independently. So we are bringing brands, we are bringing people, experienced people from the market, we are giving workshops, we are giving tools to people connect with each other and live the meaning of a community, everything around storytelling. And the website, I don't know if this is in Portuguese, because we are changing our name to a global name, but the website is www.academia.trama.com.br. So
I will have you write that down so that we can put that in the show notes for you. Way I won't misspell it.
But the actual thing that I would love to say is people should get deep in self-understanding, you know? I think this is the most powerful way to create better stories, to find who you are as a human being in this world that has feelings and purpose. And I think people must try to experiment different things to understand who you are as a person, right?
Oh, that's beautiful. Now I wish mine was as profound. My one cool thing, unless Justin, you'd like to go first.
Oh, I'll go first, sure. My one cool thing isn't, well, I mean, it's kind of cool. It's not at all cool, but I recently put my phone on shuffle in the car and it started playing Christmas music and I was really into it. So my one cool thing is Christmas music when it's not Christmas. Give it a go. I know it sounds weird, but like, give it a go. Put on Mariah Carey and you will be surprised at how much joy it brings you.
You know, my wife makes me watch every Christmas movie during the year, you know, to get to Christmas Day. Yeah, she loves it.
all of that sounds super sentimental, and mine is the opposite. I mean, sort of. My one cool thing is losing reception. Yesterday, Rogers went out in, like, I don't know how much of Canada, but at least the majority of Ontario with which I was trying to do business. And so these past 2 days have been just sort of this waterfall or domino reaction of everything that I had scheduled to get done, that just started not only trying to shove themselves deeper into my schedule and having everything pile up, but just waterfall over the cliff and disappear off of my schedule. And I hit this point where I was talking with my cousin and we're like, we haven't connected in a while. Let's hop on a phone call and I'm just going to go for a walk. I've been walking my coffee around the block whenever it's not raining or snowing at this point. Cause thank you, Ontario. But I couldn't, because Rogers was out and I couldn't do anything without my Wi-Fi. Thank God I'm with the other necessary evil for my Wi-Fi, Bell. So I was able to do some work yesterday, but what it forced me to do is, I downloaded a podcast because I still didn't want to be without some sort of audio in my ears to distract me from, I guess, the rage I was feeling while I went on my walk. And then the podcast episode ended up being super short and it cut out. And then I'm like, well, now I'm literally with nothing but myself, with my own thoughts. And so I kind of followed the trend that Rogers had set for me and decided not only would I be disconnected from my phone calls and my meetings, I pulled my headphones out and then just actually heard the world around me and my own breath. And it was a nice reminder of how much I was getting caught up in this technological world. And as much as I love being able to connect and see people, like, it's so cool that I can just hop on the screen and talk to you, Rodrigo, while you're down there in Brazil, and yeah, talk to Justin, even though I don't get to see him in person anymore. And I think it's very useful for my own sanity, but having those moments where I don't think a lot of people do take the moments to get to know themselves, what you're talking about, Rodrigo. So I was forced to the other day. So I don't know, maybe that was my push towards finding something a little bit more profound in my life. I'm on the path.
Yeah. But I think you are, I loved what you just said, really. Yeah, I feel connected with that as well. I think we have a whole new opportunities to live and to connect with people, and we need to use it for our own sake, you know, to be healthy, you know, something like that.
I agree. I am really grateful we got to have you as a guest on our show. Please do come back another time.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate the invite. So count on me for the next to be continued this podcast. All right.
Yes, it's not a feature film. We're turning this into a series. I love it.
Yeah. Ooh, I love it.
Well, thank you, and thank you to everybody. Thank you to everybody who tuned in live.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
If you like this podcast, you can support it by subscribing to it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave us a rating or review, which sincerely helps us and we absolutely love. Come hang out with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and send us your questions, recommendations, and cool things at we'retotallynotokay@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to We're Totally Not Okay, but that's okay.